Good afternoon and welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, if our thoughts create our feelings, then it follows that changing the way we think will change the way we feel. It seems good in theory, but is it really that simple? Can we overcome years of depression and anxiety by simply challenging irrational thoughts and eliminating cognitive distortions? In his best-selling books, Feeling Good and The Feeling Good Handbook, psychiatrist Dr. David Burns identifies the self-defeating thoughts that are common in mood disorders and provides tools and strategies that help us intentionally change our thinking. On today's edition of Line One, Dr. David Burns returns to share his thoughts on how the intentional practice of challenging long-held negative beliefs can lead us to see a more accurate picture of the world and help us relieve self-doubt, social anxieties, irrational fear, and debilitating depression. Dr. Burns received his medical degree from Stanford University, completed his psychiatric residency at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, and is currently an adjunct clinical professor emeritus of psychiatry at Stanford University. Dr. Burns has authored 11 books on the treatment of mood disorders, including his best-selling book, Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy. Welcome back to Line One. Dr. Burns, I appreciate you taking the time to join us again so soon.
Thanks for having me back. I loved the last show, and I'm just delighted to be working with you again today.
All right. I want to encourage listeners to take this opportunity to call in or email any questions you might have on today's topic. Our show 2 weeks ago generated some good calls and lots of interest, so Dr. Burns agreed to come back, and we'll be digging a little deeper into this topic. I would encourage anyone who missed part one of our conversation to listen to it on our archives, which can be found at alaskapublic.org or on the Line One podcast. As always, you can reach us in one of three ways. Call us locally at 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. All right, Dr. Burns, on the last program 2 weeks ago, we discussed a lot about cognitive behavioral therapy and the idea of changing thinking in order to change mood. So we're going to delve into that a little bit more. Can you just briefly talk about the theory of CBT and some of the research that, just for folks who might have not heard it, what is CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy?
Well, cognition is just a fancy word with a simple meaning, and it means your thoughts. And it's an ancient idea that goes back at least, 2,000 years or more to the time of the Greek philosopher Epictetus, who said, people are disturbed not by things, but by the views we take of them. In other words, it's not the events of our life that upset us, but the way we think about it. And when people are depressed, you're telling yourself things like, I'm a loser, my problems are hopeless, I'll never get better, there's no point in doing anything, there's something wrong with me, you blame yourself for all the bad things that have happened. And then when you're anxious, you're giving yourself thoughts of danger, predicting something terrible is about to happen. When I give my speech in front of the group, my mind will go blank, I'll make a fool of myself, people will chuckle, they'll look down on me, I'm going to ruin my reputation. Things like that. When you're angry, you have thoughts of unfairness. So-and-so is screwing me over, taking advantage of me, treating me unfairly. And then those thoughts generate anger and feelings of injustice. And that's the first idea, and that's been around. I mean, Shakespeare had that idea. The Buddha had that idea. It's not new. What Aaron Beck came up with when he kind of developed what he called cognitive therapy was a revolutionary idea that when you're depressed or anxious, the thoughts that upset you are distorted and illogical, that you're usually telling yourself something that isn't true, that depression and anxiety are the world's oldest cons. You're involved in all or nothing thinking, overgeneralizations, should statements, self-blame, discounting the positive, fortune-telling, magnification, minimization, things like this. And then the third, the really amazing piece of it that at first people didn't believe, I didn't believe it when I first heard it, when I was doing brain research and psychopharmacology, I heard about his approach. And the third principle is when you change the way you think, you can change the way you feel. When you, the very instant that you correct these distortions, in that very moment, your negative feelings will vanish. And I thought, this just sounds like, so much baloney.
Right.
It's just too good to be true. So I went to his weekly seminar and tried it out with some of my toughest patients, just to prove to myself that it was baloney, that it wouldn't work. And I saw patients suddenly turn the corner on depression, people who were suicidal, who had been depressed for years or decades. And they kept telling me, we want more of this new stuff that you're doing. And it just converted me, because I was handing out, I've prescribed antidepressants on more than 10,000 occasions, and I've never seen that much from them, to be honest with you. I was running the lithium clinic at the VA hospital, and when I was using just all drugs, I didn't see a lot of people recover. And when I used this new approach, I began to see people go from despair to joy and wake up and say, it's great to be alive, and that's what I wanted for all of my patients. So it's a very simple idea, but the technology behind it is incredibly sophisticated and powerful. It's probably the most challenging form of psychotherapy ever developed. And now in my group at Stanford, we've got something even more powerful, where we've added another new dimension, another 200 horsepower to the engine, you might say, where we've also seen that motivation and resistance plays a huge role in depression and anxiety and anger. Sometimes we get stuck in negative feelings, and a part of us wants to change, but a part of us clings to the negativity and kind of fights the therapist, fights against change. And what we've discovered is why people do that, and how to turn resistance around really rapidly. So now we have new approaches to add to the many cognitive techniques we've developed over the years that will make for an even more rapid recovery for folks.
Now hopefully we can get into some of that, the team CBT approach that you have, if we have time at the end. But I do want to, so often I ask people, when they tell me how they're feeling, I said, well, what are the thoughts, the thinking that contribute to that feeling? And they often say, well, I don't know. It's because they're so automatic. Is that correct? It's just that these have been things that we have strengthened and used for years and years.
Yeah, when you're depressed, the thoughts come into your mind automatically, and you don't have to put them in there. They just flow across your mind, and they seem so real and valid that you believe them like their skin on your hands. That they seem so real, and you're not aware of how much you're deceiving yourself. And you had raised an excellent question earlier. What do you say to the person who says, well, I can see rationally that what I'm telling myself isn't valid, but I still feel it, I still believe it? Is that something we should address?
Absolutely, and we'll get to that right after this. We're going to go ahead and take our first call, and then we'll get to that. William, you're on line one with Dr. Burns. Go ahead.
Yes, everything you're saying is extremely interesting. If I suffer, which I have suffered from depression, and you just go down the list, you could just about tick everything off from bipolar to hypomanic, manic, those kind of things. But probably one of the worst things is just hearing multiple voices that tell you all these things, and you know, how would you approach that particular problem? And also the psychotherapy you're talking about, how do you access that other than your book? And by the way, which book would you recommend to read? I heard him at the front say something, but I didn't get it.
Sure.
Well, there's two books. The book that I've written that's the most well-known is Feeling Good, the New Mood Therapy, which has sold, you know, millions and millions of copies. That was the first book that I wrote, and it really put cognitive therapy on the map, and a lot of the techniques are in that book. But I wrote a book called The Feeling Good Handbook about 10 years after that, and that's my favorite book, and it has you know, even newer techniques than the ones in Feeling Good, and a lot of people, there's research showing that about two-thirds of the people who were with severe depression who read even a portion of one of those books seem to improve, or many recover completely within 4 weeks without any other treatment. So that's certainly a first step. But you raise so many questions. I mean, if you're hearing voices and having you know, bipolar with extreme mood swings, medications, that's a disorder where medications can play an important role in addition to the psychotherapy. In the early days, when I was treating bipolar patients just with pills and lithium, the outcome was very poor. They were going in and out of the hospital frequently. When I learned the new cognitive therapy and how to develop that warm therapeutic relationship with people and helping patients change their thinking, it just made the prognosis and outcomes way, way better. In the 20 years that I was treating patients in Philadelphia, once I learned cognitive therapy, I had only one who ever had to go into the hospital. Before I learned the cognitive therapy, I would say they were all going into the hospital, you know, every 6 or 7 weeks, like a revolving door. So although bipolar is a biological disorder that we don't know the cause of it, still the psychotherapy can make a tremendous impact. And the answer to your question is, how would I hear someone, you know, who's hearing voices? I don't throw methods or solutions at people based on a diagnosis or a problem, but I work with the patient to find out, what is it that you want help with? What would be a specific moment that you were upset, and what were you thinking at that moment? What was going on? Who were you interacting with? And once we focus on that specific moment, help the person feel better at that one specific moment by changing the negative thinking, by changing the way you relate to people, that's often a little fractal, a little single example of the same problem that's going on throughout your life. And so when you help yourself at one specific moment, often many, if not all of your problems kind of fall apart like a house of cards. But the therapy is highly, highly individualized, and it's not like formulas or gimmicks you can throw it at people, because everyone has their own, you know, negative thoughts and their own individual issues. And I think therapy needs to be individualized and compassionate and personal, all the while using many powerful techniques.
And William, let me ask a clarifying question. The negative voices, are they, you know, hallucination types, or are you talking about negative self-talk?
Well, it seems like individuals in my head telling me things. So I'm not, you know, some of it's, you know, saying things like, you know, you, well, there's so many things, but it might tell me something specific to do or something I shouldn't do, but once you kind of get over that, most of what's being said is just, you know, garbage, really. So, you know, I don't know that I react to that much, but I would like to get rid of the voices, especially at night. Right now the medication is Seroquel, and it just makes me too sleepy. I don't really like that. And there have been other, rather strong, psychotic type medications. And it's like you said, you're in and out, clinics. I mean, it's years. And so anyway, I'm trying to find a solution. I will order your book at Amazon and read it and see if that helps. And are you going to be anywhere in our area? This is Anchorage area, to do any workshops or anything like that?
No, but I'm going to be in Canada quite a bit. I've got two I don't have in front of me. If you go to my website, feelinggood.com, and my workshop page, in fact, I'll go to it right now. I'm doing two anxiety workshops in Canada. Just give me one second here, and I'll give you the information. One is going to be June 4 and 5 in Calgary, Canada, and that's going to be on treatment of anxiety. It's called Scared Stiff, Fast Effective Treatments for Anxiety Disorders. And June 6th and 7th in Winnipeg, Canada, those are both two-day workshops, and I'll be doing a live demonstration the evening of day one of the workshop, so it's a lot full schedule there. And then I'm going to be in Whistler, British Columbia, from July 3 to 6, 2018, doing a four-day intensive in advanced cognitive therapy. Those are both sponsored by Jack Hirose and Associates, who operates out of Vancouver, and you can find the links on my website, www.feelinggood.com.
And William, they have Dr. Burns' website, feelinggood.com, has a lot of excellent resources and blogs, and he does some video demonstrations of therapy sessions with clients. And it's worth a look for you. And I would also suggest that you ask your doctor and find a therapist who's trained in cognitive behavioral therapy and who sort of can help guide you through some of this stuff.
Okay, well, that's been very helpful. And, we can drive down to Canada. It's not that big a deal. Very helpful. And I did like the things that you said at the beginning of the program. It validates some things that I've been thinking about the medications, how awful they've been, and even getting help for 25% of the problem would be good.
All right. Well,
yeah,
thanks.
Well, you sound good. It's a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, thank you, William. If you're just tuning in to the program, joining me again to continue our conversation from 2 weeks ago is psychiatrist and best-selling author Dr. David Burns. Today we're discussing cognitive behavioral therapy for the treatment of mood disorders, and specifically we're focusing on how changing thinking can change mood. If you have a specific question for Dr. Burns or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can reach us toll-free outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Now I want to go ahead and get to that question, Dr. Burns. The folks who come in and say, like, I understand what you're saying, and intellectually I know that I'm smart, and intellectually I know that that the whole world is not thinking I'm a terrible person, but it doesn't change the way I'm feeling. What is the obstacle, and how do we get folks to shift that from the intellectual insight to an emotional shift or a feeling change?
Right. Well, when you're having a negative thought, like, you know, I'm a loser, or like I had a woman, 10 years of panic attacks came to me for treatment in Philadelphia, and during her panic attacks, she would have the thought, you know, I'm about to die, my windpipe is going to close off, I'm about to have a heart attack, and the thoughts just terrified her, and she'd had 10 years of treatments with cardiologists and lung experts, and they would test her and tell her she's okay, and then 2 days later she'd have another panic attack and be sure she's about to die. And then after 5 years of, you know, medical treatments, which didn't help her at all, they finally diagnosed panic disorder and severe major depression, and then she started going to psychiatrists for medications, which didn't help at all, and then she had a lot of conventional therapy that didn't help at all. Now, the thing is that when you have a negative thought, it will only upset you if you believe it. Like if you put the thought in your mind right now, this building is about to be hit by an airplane or something, it won't make you anxious because you don't believe it. You have to believe that thought. And she believed 100% the thought, I'm about to die during a panic attack. Now, the cure, there's what I call the necessary and sufficient condition for emotional change, and that's you have to come up with a positive thought that you believe 100%. And in addition, it has to crush the negative thought. It has to put the lie to it. In other words, it has to drastically reduce your belief in that negative thought. And so you can do a lot of rationalizing and talking to people about what a wonderful person you are, but it's not going to help you if you still believe the negative thought, I'm a loser, or in her case, I'm about to die. And so I use many different techniques. I've developed 50 or 100 or more techniques, and different people respond to different techniques. And sometimes you have to try several techniques that don't work until you find the one that does work. Now, in the case of this patient, the thing that, and I wrote about her in my book, When Panic Attacks, which is on how to, you know, crush the thoughts that cause anxiety. And I have 40 of the techniques described in that book. But the method that helped her is what I call the experimental technique. After 5 sessions with her, and I tried maybe 3 or 4 techniques a session that didn't work, you know, she kept believing I'm about to die. She kept having 5 horrifying panic attacks every week, and they would last maybe 20 or 30 minutes. And she was just at the sobbing and panicky at each panic attack, thinking that she was on the verge of death. So the technique that finally worked is one I've developed called the experimental technique, where you have the patient do an experiment to test the validity of what they're telling themselves. It's just one of 50 or 100 techniques I use. And the way I did it, I got her to agree to let me induce a panic attack at the start of a therapy session. And I had her hyperventilate, and I knew that would make her dizzy and make her chest tight, just like during an actual panic attack. And then I said, now imagine that you're about to die, that your windpipe is closing off. We're going to have to call for the ambulance. Can you see it in your mind? And this triggered a massive panic attack, and she started sobbing, and her anxiety went to 100. She said, please, Dr. Burns, I can't do this. I can't go ahead. I'm about to die. I can't stand this. And then I pushed her. And because I knew we had a good relationship, and I knew she had to confront the monster to recover. And I said, if you were about to die right now, could you do strenuous aerobic exercises? Could you stand up and do? In fact, I think you saw, Prentice, a video of this.
I did at the training in Anaheim. I saw it, and you had her do jumping jacks and knee bends and running in place.
Yeah, and you know, 3 minutes into it, she said, "I wonder if I could really do this if I was having a heart attack." And then I said, "Well, is this what you see in the emergency room of hospitals? Patients with massive heart attacks, standing next to their gurneys doing jumping jacks?" And in that moment, her panic vanished. It went from 100 to 0 in the matter of seconds, and she started laughing uncontrollably and doubled over with laughter. And that was the end of 10 years of misery. The very moment she stopped believing the negative thought, her feelings changed. And that's always the way it is. And so when people say, well, I can see that it's my negative thought isn't true, they can't see that their negative thought isn't true. They still believe the negative thought. And that's why the therapist has to have a toolbox with many good tools, because different patients will respond to different kinds of tools. That's half of the answer, but maybe that's enough for the moment.
Well, it seems like there was something that happened when she began to laugh, and you began to laugh with her, and there was a different part of her brain that was activated, which was the happy part in the middle of a panic attack. And it is that the sort of the mechanism that switched it for her, because she'd had a lot of panic attacks before that did not kill her.
Well, yeah, but that evidence just didn't work for her. That's what everyone had been telling her for 10 years. Well, you're not going to die in your panic attacks, but she still believed it during the panic attack. She needed some proof, the way she could prove to herself that I'm not on the verge of death and that I'm not about to die, because she discovered she couldn't bring on a heart attack no matter how hard she tried.
And she didn't need an ambulance, and she didn't need a doctor, and she actually arrested it sort of herself with your guidance.
Absolutely. And now this, I have the Feeling Good podcast, free Feeling Good podcast, and we sometimes do live therapy on them. And if someone's negative thoughts are different, the technique will be different. Now this morning I did live therapy with a woman named Daisy, who generously agreed to let her actual therapy session be broadcast. Now, her issue was very different, and she's, of course, given me permission to discuss it. But she and her husband are having problems with fertility, and they're trying in vitro fertilization, and they've been failing. And she's gone into a severe depression because she's telling herself, I'm a failure as a human, as a woman, because a woman is supposed to have babies, and if I can't have a baby, then I'm defective, and I'll never be happy again. And now this needs a different kind of approach. Now she believed these thoughts 100%, and her depression and her anxiety were as severe as you can imagine a human being could have. But just to simplify it, because I tried a number of methods with her, we did a lot of resistance, melting away her resistance, which was also what contributed to her incredibly rapid and dramatic recovery in a single session. But what the method that helped her was called the paradoxical double standard technique. I said, imagine, Daisy, that I'm your friend. Give me a name. I'm just a dear friend of yours, but someone different. I'm a lot like you. And so she said, well, we'll call you Mary. And I said, now I want to hear how you would talk to your friend Mary. And I said, so Daisy, could I talk to you for a moment? She says, absolutely. I said, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but my husband and I have been having fertility problems, and I may not be able to have children, and we're going to a clinic. We're trying in vitro fertilization, but it's failed several times, and it might not work. And what do you think? Do you think that means I'm a failure as a woman? You see, and then she said, "That's ridiculous. That there's an issue, you know, of a biological type with your uterus, with implantation, but to say you're a failure as a woman is total baloney." I said, how much do you believe that? She said, 100%. And I said, now how much do you believe the thought, I'm a failure as a woman if I'm having trouble with pregnancy? She said, zero. She said, that's absurd. And she saw it in that moment. You see, she got it at the gut level. And then I said, well, yeah, but isn't it true that I'll never have true happiness? Isn't it true that a woman without children can't find fulfillment and happiness in her life? And she said, that's baloney, too. She says, I've had a tremendous fulfillment and happiness in my life in the past. I didn't have children then, and children are no guarantee of happiness. You know, and they're... You know, it's just nonsensical to say that a woman has to have children or has to have children to have happiness. That's just a bunch of lies that we pick up from society.
I've noticed, Dr. Burns, that you do a lot of role playing where you reverse positions with your clients, and I've seen that on the videos, and you give lots of examples in your book. That seems to be a very effective tool, and I've used it some in the last few weeks on purpose to test it, and it's had some fairly remarkable results with people. It seems like changing those positions and having them talk back to you as them or someone else in that position really has a powerful impact.
Yeah, and when you learn a little of the paradoxical agenda setting that we haven't talked too much about, it becomes even more powerful because that 50% of people who might initially resist you won't resist you anymore.
Okay, well, we will pick it up with paradoxical agenda setting after our short break. We're at the halfway point in our show, so we're going to go ahead and take just about a minute as a break. My guest today is psychiatrist Dr. David Burns, who's the author of one of the best-selling self-help books of all time, Feeling Good. Today, we're discussing the use of cognitive behavioral therapy for the treatment of anxiety and depression. If you have a question for Dr. Burns or a comment about today's topic, please don't hesitate to call us. Our local phone number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can call us on our toll-free line at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return to our conversation with Dr. Burns. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in to the program, psychiatrist and best-selling author Dr. David Burns has returned to Line 1 to continue our discussion from 2 weeks ago. Today we are discussing cognitive behavioral therapy for the treatment of anxiety and depression. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Burns, our local phone number is 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get on the air with your question is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. If you missed part of today's conversation, you can catch the rebroadcast of Line 1 tonight at 8. Or you can listen to it on our podcast or find it along with all of our past programs in our library of archived shows. Just go to alaskapublic.org homepage. Click on the radio tab and scroll down to Line 1. Please remember, if you're listening to us on it's a Monday evening, you're hearing a taped recording, and we won't be able to accept any phone calls. All right, so paradoxical interventions. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, and I'll bring it to life with a really inspiring example, and you saw Jill and me on our Sunday afternoon Facebook broadcast yesterday.
Yeah.
And I love working with Jill. We've often done co-therapy together in workshops when they're here in the local area. And a couple years ago, I invited her to be my co-therapist at an intensive, the four-day intensive, and an evening demonstration. And a woman volunteered to be the patient who had had pretty horrific trauma. 12 years earlier, her 12-year-old daughter had said, you know, Mommy, can I go out and play after dinner or something like that? And she had some mixed feelings, but said, oh, you know, okay, go ahead, because she'd let her daughter go out and play pretty much every night for you know, since she was 5 years old. Unfortunately, some boys with a high-powered, some kind of a pellet rifle, snuck up on her and shot her in the face. And the bullet hit her teeth and exploded and caused a lot of damage to her face and mouth. And and it was very traumatic. So the daughter became quite depressed as well, and this led to, you know, years of kind of failed therapy for the daughter's depression and anxiety, and many surgical procedures to try to correct the damage. And at the time, Karen, the mother, was volunteered to be the patient in the workshop. She'd had 12 years of tremendous suffering, had tried a lot to overcome it, but was unable to. She'd even tried prayer. She's a very religious woman, but that had not helped either. And so we began by having her fill out the daily mood log, just what's one moment that you're upset, what are your feelings, what are your negative thoughts. That's always the basis for the cognitive work. And the upsetting event was just thinking about, you know, her sitting there in the workshop thinking about the daughter's trauma and the horrible suffering of the previous 10 years. And then she had all of these emotions up at 100%, 100% depressed, 100% anxious, 100% angry, 100% ashamed, 100% guilty, 100% defective, hopeless, all of these really intense negative feelings. And then her thoughts were, I never should have let her go out and play.
Right.
100% she believed it. I'm a bad mother. 100% she believed it. I can't allow myself to be happy because my daughter is suffering. 100%. I'm to blame for ruining my daughter's life. 100%. So you kind of get the drift of it.
A lot of guilt.
Yes, a lot of guilt, absolutely. And then, you know, a lot of distorted thoughts, you know, self-blame, kind of a funny fortune-telling kind of thing. She's telling herself she should have been able to predict the future, right?
Yeah.
And emotional reasoning, I feel like a bad mother, so I must be one. Discounting the positive is another one of the 10 distortions. She's discounting all the beautiful things she's done for her daughter. Mental filter, she filters out the positives and just focuses on the negatives.
She's discounting them all based on one event that was out of her control.
Yeah, so it's overgeneralization. I'm a bad mother, generalizing from this event to her identity. It's all or nothing thinking, black and white. Now, the point being that you probably won't be successful getting her to challenge these thoughts unless you melt away her resistance first. And the way we do that is we say, and I'm going to make this very accelerated, but we essentially said to Karen, you know, before we press the magic button and make all of this disappear tonight, which is what Karen said she wanted to happen, I said, I'm not sure we want to make all your negative thoughts and feelings disappear. We better first say, what does it show about you that's positive and awesome on the one hand? And on the other hand, what are some benefits to you of having all these negative thoughts and feelings?
Right.
And so it's probably pretty apparent to the listeners, but Karen came up, the first thing she said, well, maybe this shows that I'm a very loving mother.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely, your depression shows your love for your daughter. You're beating up on yourself, saying I'm a bad mother, paradoxically shows what a good mother you are. And your anxiety is a benefit, too, because it keeps you on your toes, always looking for a new treatment, always protecting her. The last time you let down your guard, she was shot in the face. So what a beautiful thing to be anxious all the time, and that's motivated you to bring the very best treatment for your doctor, and on and on and on. And together, in about 10 minutes, we came up with 22 beautiful things that all of these negative thoughts and feelings were showing about Karen. Now, that's the opposite of traditional therapy, where we say you have bad feelings and a mental disorder that we're going to correct. Instead, we're saying your suffering is actually the manifestation of what's the most beautiful thing about you. That your depression shows your passion for life, your love for your daughter. And Karen couldn't believe it. It just blew her mind. But she couldn't deny it. It also shows her humility. You know, her when she says it's my fault, shows that she's accountable. It shows that she has high standards. Her high standards have motivated her to do tremendous things for her daughter and in her career. And it's just so startling to the patient, and it's the opposite of the way we're taught to treat people. And then once you do that, then you say, well, maybe, Karen, instead of pressing a magic button and making everything disappear in today's session, maybe we should just dial it down a little bit. You don't want your depression to go away. Otherwise, you say, yeah, my daughter was shot in the face, and I'm as happy as can be. That would be ridiculous. So how much depression do you need at the end of the session today? If we have a magic dial, how much would you like to have? And she said, oh, maybe 10% depression is enough, and 5% anxiety is enough, and 0% shame is enough, and maybe I want my anger to go from 100 to 30. You know, her anger is also good. It shows that she has a moral value system, and the parent shouldn't have been letting those boys run around with a dangerous weapon like that.
Yeah, some anxiety and some sadness are appropriate and activating, and so you're validating those feelings and not making them wrong.
That's right. And then when the patient becomes proud of their symptoms, instead of ashamed of themselves, they paradoxically are ready to let go of them. And then we came in with, you know, some of the role play techniques, and she blew her negative thoughts out of the water, just totally. She just demolished them. We used double standard, externalization of voices. We didn't need many techniques or many role reversals, and she just totally crushed the negative thoughts and reduced her belief in them to zero. And then the odd thing was, not only did her feelings go to zero, see, the goal that they set is just kind of a temporary thing to get them started.
Right.
It's like making a deal with their subconscious resistance. And actually, at the end, she estimated all of her feelings between zero and minus a million. In fact, she was in a state of blistering euphoria. And we have that on video, too.
She just had such relief.
Yeah, it was just such relief. She couldn't believe. And that was 2 years ago, and she's still just very happy. I know her. I've gotten feedback back from her. It was just remarkable, and that's what Team CBT is all about, is these new techniques for getting the patient to radically change their view of the symptoms and what the symptoms mean, and to just melt away the resistance. And then when the patient is on your side, there's nothing can stop you, because you've got two really smart people working as a team, and
right.
You don't have to swim upstream. And that's been, I think, the biggest discovery of my career, and that's evolved just in the last 10 years. And, you know, Jill helped with that, too, Jill Levitt. She's been an important part of the evolution of Team CBT.
You know, Team CBT sounds like a whole nother program at some point.
Yeah.
We got to go to the phones real quick. Roland, you're on line one with Dr. Burns. Go ahead. You have a question?
Hi, Dr. Burns. My daughter is 28. She was diagnosed with schizophrenia 12 years ago. She's lived at assisted living, and she's been having voices, homicidal and suicidal voices. So from assisted living, she's been going back and forth to the hospital, from the hospital, and she's taking lots of various medications. Nothing seems to be helping to stop the voices. So my question is, do you do therapy over Skype or over phone, over the phone?
There are a couple people in our group who are doing some Skype work. I'm not doing clinical private practice right now. I'm just doing teaching. But there are some who do it. But and if you email Prentice or me, david@feelinggood.com, I could give you a couple names to check into. But I'm so sorry to hear that. The schizophrenia is a horrible biological disorder. And it just breaks my heart to hear about it. Or, you know, I've worked with many individuals with schizophrenia, and one day we'll hopefully know the cause. But it's some basic tissue problem in the brain, and the stress for the patient, for the family is just unbelievable. There is no really cure for it right now. The meds can help a little. A good psychotherapy can help a little bit, but I feel so sad to hear what you're saying. It must be heartbreaking for you.
Right. So I'm sorry, I didn't get the email at the website.
Oh, it's just david@feelinggood.com.
Okay.
Or even Mike Christiansen, who was on USAW Prentice. He may know of somebody. Where is this gentleman calling from, Prentice?
Oh, he's calling from here in Anchorage.
In Anchorage, yeah. Right.
Roland.
Mike Christiansen would be a good person. He... I'm not sure. There's all these licensing issues. You know, you have to be licensed in a state, and
right.
There's all these regulations about Skype therapy. I'm big on Skype therapy. Even phone therapy, I think, can be wonderfully helpful for people.
Roland, why don't you email me your information at line1@alaskapublic.org, and I can... I can get back with you, and we can chat some more off air.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Roland. Appreciate the call. Okay, we got an email question that I wanted to get to, and this leads in real quick, or it kind of builds on that. Is it possible to know when a patient needs meds that their disorder is not fully helped by CBT? Some things seem to be intractable, and... How about treating PTSD is the question.
Well, those are a whole bunch of questions
right
there. I've been doing workshops throughout the U.S. on PTSD for the past 2 or 3 years. And in my hand, I mean, I can only speak for my own experience, but I've treated about 50 PTSD patients for free in workshops as a part of the teaching. And pretty much... Just about every time they've had a complete elimination of symptoms in a single two-hour session, I find it a real easy disorder to treat. But the motivation, of course, is going to be crucial. And if you've got a veteran, U.S. veteran, with PTSD who's getting $3,000 a month disability payments, it's for the PTSD. It could arguably interfere with the capacity of that individual to recover, but I treat the individual, not the disorder, and
right.
We just gave a PTSD example with Karen. We certainly had all of this horrible, you know, post-traumatic anxiety and depression and shame and rage. As intense as a human being can have, and yet, you know, when you just look at her negative thoughts and help her turn them around, the recovery was very, very, very simple, really. What was the other part of that question? Can you tell, are there times when a person needs medication? I think was that one of the ones?
Yeah, when is it possible to know when somebody needs meds? When would you add them to treatment?
Yeah. Well, first of all, there are several things like schizophrenia and bipolar manic depressive illness that are clearly biological, and will almost always need some medication in addition to good therapy. When I was in practice, I used to tell people, let's work together without medications, and if you'll do your psychotherapy homework. And work hard and come to the sessions. I suspect you'll find you can turn your moods around in a way that leaves nothing to be desired without medications. But if we've done our best for, you know, 5-10 sessions and you're not making any progress, I've never been opposed to adding some kind of medication. I would say one at a time and not in real high dose, and if that helps speed things along, that's fine. But you're going to have to keep doing your psychotherapy homework, and then once you're fully recovered, I'm going to taper you off of the medication so you can be drug free. Most of my patients I treated without meds. They didn't want meds, but a lot of them did. And if I put them on an antidepressant, and after they recovered, I tapered them off, and they did fine because they had tools for managing their moods without having to rely on the medications. I've never been against medications. I'm just against medications that don't work and medications that are overprescribed, and I'm against keeping people on, you know, antidepressants or benzodiazepines in large doses when the person is still depressed and anxious. That, to me, is proof that treatment isn't working. And I don't believe in keeping people with treatments that don't work. I want people to recover and wake up and feel great in the morning. I'm sad and angered because I think we're way over-medicated as a society and you know, just prescribe. If it worked, I started out that way. I was a full-time drug therapist and brain researcher. I did research on brain chemistry, and I gave out all of the medications. But in my experience, it fell short of the mark for almost everybody. For some people, it was helpful, curative, rarely ever. And I saw that people needed more than these biological treatments.
The medications do nothing to address the core negative beliefs and negative thoughts and cognitive distortions that you talk about.
Exactly. If you're telling yourself that you're a loser, that you're inferior, if you're beating up on yourself constantly, or if you're having a conflict with your wife or your partner or your husband and you don't know how to communicate skillfully and you keep triggering each other into arguments, how is a pill going to correct that problem? I mean, fortunately, there's great solutions, great techniques, but I can't conceive of a pill to help someone with a troubled marriage.
Right.
And all of the anxiety disorders, they're treating them with benzodiazepines like Xanax. And I never use benzodiazepines in the treatment of anxiety because the techniques, the drug-free techniques, are so powerful. Almost all the anxiety disorders, in my experience, are really easy to treat. But the benzos are addictive if you take them several times a day as prescribed for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you try to go off of them, you'll go into withdrawal consisting of intense anxiety and insomnia, the very reasons they were prescribed in the first place, and that's how people get hooked on them. But I'm for using all the tools in the toolbox.
Right.
I just think it's great that we've got so many powerful techniques so that people who want to be treated without meds in most cases can be successfully treated, and I think that's great news. But people don't know about it because there's so much promotion on TV, advertisements for drugs, and you get the idea that if you're shy, just take this medication, and then you'll be on the beach and making love to some beautiful person, and your shyness will disappear. And I tried that for years.
Right.
For thousands of prescriptions I've written, and you know I just think we're barking up the wrong tree to some extent, thinking everything's going to be done with a pill.
All right, so medications without therapy is sort of counterintuitive if you're not working on the issues. I do want to talk quickly about the terms approval addiction and love addiction. What do you mean by those terms?
Also achievement addiction, but
right.
One cognitive therapist but believe that sometimes our value system can set us up for depression and anxiety, and ones that we see commonly are the idea I must be loved to feel happy and fulfilled, and particularly if you're rejected by somebody, you start to idealize that person and tell yourself, without, you know, John's love, I can't have a happier or fulfilled life. And this erroneous belief is kind of reinforced by society. in music. You know, and music is so beautiful. We want to kind of idolize romantic love and think it's going to make all of our problems go away. And, you know, Barbara Streisand and her song, you know, people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. And so we think, oh boy, love is going to be just the thing I need. But I've seen many people horribly depressed because of this belief that because they're alone in the first place. 60% of my clinical practice was people who were having trouble with the dating scene. They didn't have a partner. They'd been divorced. They couldn't get back into the dating scene, and most of them were telling themselves, "I can't feel happy and fulfilled without love." I remember I was treating a guy in Philadelphia, and really a neat guy, but he didn't think his appearance was that good, and he was just desperate, believing he had to, you know, find a girlfriend or he couldn't be happy. And he would go to all the singles bars in the town where he lived and try to hit on women, and he wasn't very good at it, and he was constantly rejected. And he kind of got the reputation of, you know, stay away from this guy, he's bad news, he comes on too strong.
Right.
And I kept telling him, you know, I said, I've written a book on how to hustle and how to make women attract, chase after you, and I can show you how to have a great love life, I believe, but I won't do it until you've learned to be happy alone. And there's a part of my book, Intimate Connections, that the first section is how to find happiness alone. I said, once you don't need love anymore, then I'll show you how to get all the love you want. And he got so mad at me, he fired me, because he thought I was just telling him rubbish, and he was enraged. And then I heard from him again 6 months later. He said, could I come in for I want to have a little follow-up session with you. I said, yes, I'd love to see you. And he said, after I fired you, he said, you know, about a month later, he was a school teacher, and he said, I kind of began to think of what you were telling me, and I always loved photography, and I thought, instead of trying to hit on women, I think on weekends I'll go out and start photographing flowers and stuff and scenery. And he said, I got into it, and I started developing my own photos. This is before digital cameras. And he said, I suddenly realized I had found 100% happiness alone. And he said, it blew my mind. And then the oddest thing, he said, one Saturday I'd been out shooting photos, and I was, you know, having lunch in this local cafe, and I saw this very attractive woman sitting there, and all of a sudden she came and she sat at my table, and she said, "Do you mind if I join you for lunch?" And he said, no, I don't mind at all. And then they got to talking, and she said, you know, ever since I've been a little girl, once when I was a little girl, I walked past this garage and I saw a pinup girl on the calendar.
Dr. Burns, we got to wrap up because we're almost out of time.
The end of the story is she asked him to photograph her, which he did, and then they ended up making love and getting married. And he came back and said, Dr. Burns, you were right. I just wanted to tell you.
That's what being happy alone will do for you. All right, Dr. Burns, thanks so much for joining me again. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Have a good one.
It was fun. On the next program, Dr. Wood will be joined by Dr. Siv Fossey for a discussion about early child brain development, autism, attention deficit disorder, and learning and behavioral disorders. That's next Monday, March 19th at 2, repeating at 8. Eric Bork was our web editor for today's program. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to join us. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.